Last year, I had the opportunity to list my Montecito guest house on Airbnb. This was part of a special project that Airbnb spearheaded to build connection and to make the world feel a little less lonely. It was such a pleasure to get to know my Airbnb guests over dinner and share my home with them so that they could rest and recharge on their trip. But typically, the beauty of hosting on Airbnb is that while you're away, someone else can get as much joy from your home as you do. Being a host on Airbnb is great for those who travel frequently, have extra space, or own a seasonal home. If you've stayed at an Airbnb, you know the unique experience it offers. And now you can share that same experience with others in addition to earning additional income on the side. To learn more about hosting on Airbnb, head to airbnb.com/host.
When you are pioneering anything or introducing new ideas to the culture,
you get criticized.
You do?
Yeah. Did you hear about that?
I didn't find the one. I found someone I respected and we made it the one.
In a sort of longing kind of view of love, people understand each other as if by magic.
Nothing in itself is addictive on the one hand. On the other hand, everything could be addictive if there's an emptiness in that person that needs to be filled.
I now know that nobody changes until they change their energy. And when you change your energy, you change your life.
I'm Gwyneth Paltrow. This is the Goop Podcast, bringing together thought leaders, culture changers, creatives, founders and CEOs, scientists, doctors, healers and seekers, here to start conversations. Because simply asking questions and listening has the power to change the way we see the world. Here we go. I recently had the honor of talking to Venus Williams on the heels of the French Open. It was interesting to hear her perspective on competition and to learn more about where her drive comes from. I loved the stories she told me about her childhood and the values that her parents instilled in her at such a young age. And I had a lot of business questions for Venus about her many ventures, which include an interior design firm, lifestyle and activewear brand, personal care products, and even a plant-based protein company. I'm excited for you to hear what she had to say.
I'm so happy to have you on the podcast. You're so incredibly inspirational and amazing. And you need, I think, very little by way of introduction, especially in terms of your incredible tennis career. You're an iconoclast. You've broken all these boundaries. And you also are a fashion icon on the court, which I love. And you started breaking the rules there. You're kind of a punk rock rule breaker, which I love about you from afar. And then now you've parlayed your incredible strength and your platform into doing all of these super cool businesses. And that's what's really fascinating to me, because I guess I did a similar thing, right? I had one career and then I had a really hard time kind of giving myself permission to start this business when I started it, you know, 13 years ago. And did you feel like you had the permission and the latitude to just kind of pursue all of these different interests? Did you feel at any point like, I don't know, trepidation about doing it? Or were you just like, you felt like I'm just going into all these things?
Yeah, I kind of had a different upbringing. My parents encouraged us to be more than just athletes because we started young. I started at 4 and now I'm 40. So I'm going on 36 years of this. So they encouraged us to know what we were, who we were off of the court. And
how did they do that?
Might get your education, have good grades. And my dad really wanted us to be entrepreneurs, and we would be riding to the tennis or tournaments or wherever. And he would put in like this tape, and it was about foreclosures. I was like 10 years old. He had high expectations, and I don't know how to do a foreclosure to this day, but just kind of like this thinking, you know, of how to think outside the box and think for yourself. So yeah, definitely my parents empowered us to like be those kind of women.
What were the other tools that they implemented to get you to really connect with yourself or understand yourself?
Yeah, just everything. I think about that now because Serena has a daughter, and I think about how my parents made a lesson out of everything, you know. And yeah, my dad said growing up, always have an answer, even if it's the wrong answer. So we grew up always having to have an answer. And it helps you to think on your feet. It helps you to, you know, be able to adjust no matter the situation.
Did he have any particular pearls of wisdom that you always remember?
Yeah, absolutely. He was, oh my gosh, so many. One of my favorites is a slow walker is a slow thinker. So we weren't allowed to walk slow. We had to walk.
I agree with him.
Right? Right?
I agree.
Slow walker, slow talker, slow thinker. And so now to this day, it annoys me when someone walks slow. You know, you got to walk fast. You got to have a purpose, you know. And I think that makes sense, though, because when you start with, you know, a physical presence, that will also go to your mind as well. So that one's interesting. He had a lot of them, but that was one.
I like that one. I think slow driver, too. Can I add that to the list?
You might hate me. I don't drive too fast.
I grew up in New York City and I drive like a taxi driver.
I've never driven the city. I never want to.
I wouldn't recommend it, actually.
Okay, so you've driven in the city before?
Oh yeah, I cut my teeth driving in New York City. So my friends say I drive like a maniac. I think I'm a great driver, but
you think you can handle like the driving in Paris, like around like the Arc de Triomphe or in Rome, where it's really crazy?
Definitely, I've done it. I've done it. Wow. I lived in London for years, like at 12 years or something like that. And I drove in London on the wrong side of the road. I had a Vespa. Whenever I go to Europe, I rent a car. I bomb around all over the place.
Oh my gosh. One time we were driving in Wimbledon. We had a car and we could drive ourselves to Wimbledon Park and parking lot. And Serena, she hit the curb and we had a flat and we had a double match and we didn't know what to do. We had a match. We're like, what do we do? And we had to figure that situation out quick because you can't just not show up to the match. So that was interesting. She's never driven again since that time on the wrong, like in Australia or London. She won't. She like killed it for her.
Oh my God, that's so great. How fun though to be able to be with your sister. I was thinking, I don't have a sister. I have a brother whom I adore, but I was thinking about this, like how fun for you to be able to go through life. I mean, I imagine, I don't know, maybe it's a real pain in the ass, but is it amazing to go through a career with a sister?
It is. And I can't imagine doing it without her because that's all I know. And then when I look at a different perspective that most other athletes, they do it alone, but I've never had to do this alone. And especially in an individual sport, you are alone. You walk out there and that's it. You know, you can't have someone get in, you can't sit on the bench for a second. So it is amazing to be able to have walked, you know, the same road with her.
And I know people, you know, they always ask you like, what's it like to beat your sister and what's it like to lose to your sister? But I just wonder if like there's, because I imagine you love your sister and so much, and it almost sounds like the way you describe it, almost as if you're twins, like going through something together, you know? And is there like anything particularly more vulnerable, do you think, about losing or winning to someone that you love? Like does it feel more vulnerable when you win or lose to her than someone mm-hmm. who's a stranger?
Yeah, actually, because no matter what happens on the court, Serena's my sister. So the match is just the match. But for me, when I play other people, it's not just a match. It's like, I lost? What? I can't, you know, it becomes personal. Whereas with her, it actually doesn't become personal because that's my sister. So right. We go to the court, we would go just, and then off of the court and that's over. And oftentimes we've like played each other in a final and then have to like get ready for a doubles final the same day. And like 2 hours later, we're walking on court to play like that final. You know, we've done that many times. So, yeah.
So this drive that you describe and have, which I also see manifest across your many businesses, like, I'm always curious about people who have drive like that. I always try to help myself understand this, but where do you think drive like that comes from? Like that singularity of focus with that level of like ambition and heat behind it. Do you think it comes from like sadness somewhere, or it's just like your constitution or the way that your parents raised you to play with that mindset?
I would say for me, it comes from a place of giving because I feel like I have something to give. So that drives me. Yeah, if I feel like I have nothing to give, then I'm not driven. So on the court, off of the court, the things that I pursue is because I feel like I have something to give to it. And then in that sense, it also gives something to me. So I think tennis has given me so much more than I've given tennis, you know?
I don't think that's true with all the like pay equality work you've done. And I think you've done a lot.
Well, I guess it's been, you know, symbiote, you know, we've gone hand in hand together with that.
Right. But
yeah. So I think the day when I don't have anything left to give, that's when I know I have to move on, but that's what drives me.
Right.
And you know, you want to wake up with no regrets. And it waking up with no regrets for me doesn't mean that you never failed. It just means you gave everything, even on those times you failed. And that is something you can be proud of.
Or that like you've, it doesn't mean that you've never done anything that you would do differently, or that, you know, like you could still feel bad about something that you've done, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you regret it. For me anyway, those things that I look back on and I feel like I wish that had been different, I wouldn't change it still, you know, even though, even if I get like a pang of shame or guilt or whatever, because I feel like the recognition of those things then become a building block, you know, and you can shape who you are from those things.
Absolutely. Learning from it. Mm-hmm. Some things sometimes you just don't know until you learn it or have those experiences. And it's part of growing up. And I think in a way, we're never done growing up. If you're done learning, then where are you in life?
Yes.
So I absolutely agree with that.
Last year, I had the opportunity to list my Montecito guest house on Airbnb. This was part of a special project that Airbnb spearheaded to build connection and to make the world feel a little less lonely. It was such a pleasure to get to know my Airbnb guests over dinner and share my home with them so that they could rest and recharge on their trip. But typically, the beauty of hosting on Airbnb is that while you're away, someone else can get as much joy from your home as you do. Being a host on Airbnb is great for those who travel frequently, have extra space, or own a seasonal home. If you've stayed at an Airbnb, you know the unique experience it offers, and now you can share that same experience with others in addition to earning additional income on the side. To learn more about hosting on Airbnb, head to airbnb.com/host.
I wanted to ask you, because when Naomi Osaka the other day, she said she withdrew because she didn't want to talk to the press. I thought your response, which kind of went viral, was so great and so both protective of her and so strong in your own framework of how you deal with stuff. Like, I don't think that people fully understand the energy exchange that the press on that level, like how much they can take from a public figure. I know that there's, of course, the argument that, well, without the media, you know, a public figure can't have then the impact that they have, which I totally understand. But when the press wants something out of you, like it's an energetic exchange, right? Like you can feel really depleted from it. And there's can be a ton of negativity. When you read or saw that she had done that, what was your feeling about that?
I was proud of her doing what she needed to do for herself. And as a young person or as a person who is in demand or popular, people can want a lot of things from you and you can fail to take care of yourself. And I learned early on to only do the things that I wanted to do. And it doesn't mean that you don't always do the things you don't want to do. I have to plank every day. I hate planking, but you know, but you know what I mean? Like you can get pushed into situations that you didn't.
Boundaries.
Yeah. So you're creating boundaries. That's the word. Thank you. So I was really proud of her for standing up for herself and recognizing that, hey, I have to take care of me. Lots of people are asking things from me that I can't give.
Yes.
So she took that moment. I was proud of her for that. And yeah, press can really tear you down. I don't read anything about myself ever.
Me neither.
Because you're just one person. And then there's all these other people and you can't deal with all those opinions, no matter how strong a person you are. I don't think it's possible. And I feel like I'm a pretty strong person. I can't deal with it. So you just have to, I think they say that some people argue, yes, press is a part of it. But at the same time, as a young kid, you're out there training to win a tournament. You're not necessarily training to go, you know, win press or be famous. I mean, for me personally, as an athlete, I wanted to win. I wasn't going to go, you know, have fanfare. So there's definitely two sides to it.
And you have been in the media since you were so young. Like, there's been so much focus on you. How did you learn over time to create those boundaries for yourself? Or how did you learn to not let that theater of public opinion seep in?
I think definitely mom and dad again. Mm-hmm. They encourage us, never read anything about yourself. So that way you can avoid the issues before it even gets there. Just knowing who you are, you really have to know who you are. Because if you don't, it's going to be out for a wild ride. So I think our parents helped us to know who we were. They encouraged to be strong, confident, know yourself, know your history. All those different things help you to be firmly planted. And also to have a belief system and have some values. If you don't have any values, then you might do anything. And you might believe anything. So I think just having that strong set of values, that a strong spiritual background, all that stuff, like, kept my feet on the ground. And it gave us, you know, myself, Serena, my family, an opportunity to just kind of be calm in the storm.
Right. I'm just wondering, as a parent, like, how, what are the things that you say to a kid so that they are not emulating you or taking on your value system or what you think is right and wrong, but like, how can you encourage a child to really look inward and create their own value system?
I don't know about that, because my parents gave me my value system and I'm just like them. And I love it. So it worked for me.
Their value system resonated with you.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as a young person, you need a strong start. You got to know, you got to have some sort of values. And then later on, if you decide to make your own, you know, freebie to it. But yeah, their value system really helped me and I stuck to it. So yeah, I think every kid's got to make their choice at some point. And I think also you were asking, how do you know how to weather that? Is kind of just encouraging your kids to telling them they're great without, you know, making them, you know, big-headed or anything. Like, praise them, encourage them, the things that they do well, and it starts to make them feel good about themselves too. And I got a lot of that. I still get that with my dad. He comes on the court, still picks up balls, and, you know, he says, "You're doing great, you really did that well." And, you know, there's just been different moments in my life where I thought maybe I wasn't doing great, and there was always just this cheerleader behind me telling me when I wasn't, you know, obviously when I wasn't doing my best or needed some corrections, but also, you're also doing well. And I think that's important for parents to do, to find that balance.
For sure. And, you know, it's interesting for me as a parent to talk to you, because your parents raised two such incredibly successful, amazing women. And I actually need to get your dad on my podcast so I can have a parenting interview with him.
Oh my God. Well, we could get my mom out here. She is something, because she said you have to have mental training too as a kid, and you have to train your mind. So
how did they do that?
I just heard her say that last year. So why didn't she never told me she was giving me mental training? But you train your mind also to be ready to deal with what's happening in the world. Life is beautiful, but it can be challenging, right?
Yeah.
And if you don't have your mind ready to face those challenges, it might be a problem. So she also said that mental training is important for kids too. And I guess it's, you can do that in each lesson without telling them, because I sure didn't know she was mentally training.
I need to.
I was drinking Kool-Aid without knowing it.
I need her to write this manual, or I need to get her on this podcast. What do you think has kept you persevering the way that you have, you know, through all these years of tennis and injuries and successes and failures and, you know, like, this incredible career? And you just, I mean, you said you're 40 and you're still like doing all these big tournaments. I mean, it's pretty amazing.
You know, it's an opportunity. That's how I see it. I love what I do. It's a lot of fun. I love the challenge that comes with it. I think in life, if you have the opportunity to find something you love and that challenges you, it's the most beautiful thing. So I always encourage people to do that, because it's like, it's just like falling in love every day. You get to do something that just makes you so happy. And I love that part. So I absolutely love that. I feel like I was meant to play tennis. I'm a big girl. You can't see this, but I'm 6'1". I have ridiculously long arms. I needed to play a sport. So I'm fortunate I get to do this. And there's only, you know, at the French Open, there's 100 people that get to play that. And there's so many millions that would love to be in that position. And when I see, sometimes I think, wow, I get to do this, you know, and you're like, it's surreal at times. Of course, you deserve to be there because you put in the work. But at the same time, it's just so surreal. Wow, how lucky am I that everything worked out that I get to be here at this moment, and kind of try to take that gratitude on the court with you.
I think a lot of people get, when they've been doing something for a long time and there's a grind aspect, you know, if you're not coming from a place of gratitude, of like the drag of whatever. And it's just so nice to hear that, especially because you also have, I was reading that you have an autoimmune condition and you've managed to still succeed at this level. Will you tell me a little bit about it?
Well, it's called Sjogren's, and it's an autoimmune disease. And it's, you know, some of the hallmark symptoms are dry eye and dry mouth, but also joint pain, fatigue, and all sorts of other things that can come with it. You know, all autoimmune diseases, like, there, no one's the same. Everyone kind of has different symptoms. So that's definitely a challenge, because it's not something that goes away. It's something I have to manage on a daily basis. But I try to manage it my best through my health and my diet and how I treat myself, getting enough rest. Once I got diagnosed, I had to slow down for me, because I used to like to work until like 2 or 3 in the morning. Like, I can't do that anymore. I have to go to bed early. So there were changes I had to make in my life. And to be honest, I feel like I'm still learning about it and how to perfect it and still like reach my optimum with, you know, a condition that like takes you down, like how to bring yourself back up.
How old were you when you received the diagnosis?
I was 31. When I had that diagnosis. But for me, and that's another thing with autoimmune disease, a lot of times people aren't diagnosed. I had to get to a point where I was so ill that I couldn't play anymore, that I finally got a diagnosis. So right. You have to definitely be your own best advocate as a patient.
That's for sure. And I was wondering if, because I think there are, just across autoimmune, there are certain things that you can do from a lifestyle perspective, which really help, right? And you just touched on those. So could you tell me a little bit about how you manage it, like specifically with your diet? Let's start there.
Yes. So specifically with the diet, I find that a gluten-free diet really helps, especially with joint pain. I find if I can get myself to stay off gluten, I'm honest about my life. I am not perfect. I have ups, I have downs, and I have rounds.
Especially if you're in Paris, like, you got to have a croissant or baguette.
And the French toast here.
It's you got to.
So yeah, I getting rid of joint pain, really going gluten-free really helped. Simple things, getting enough sleep helped a lot. If you do not get enough sleep, if you wear yourself in the ground, you're going to get a flare up. You're going to not be able to be your best. I find iron works a lot. Sometimes when you have this constant inflammation, it works, you know, or autoimmune disease, you can have low iron levels, which also contributes to not feeling well.
I have that too. Yeah.
Your iron up helps a lot. Sugar-free, I think, helps too, unfortunately, which is a sad, sad thing, honestly.
What about alcohol?
Alcohol's okay.
What? I need your nutritionist number. What the fuck?
2 thumbs up to alcohol. I mean, I have my splurges. I don't drink often, but I love my champagnes and I love my wines nowadays. And so when I have an opportunity, you do have to live sub. I think when you're really clean, like, it can make you feel bad if you stay off of it. But I think we all have to find that balance.
Yeah. Yeah, me too. And do you have any like specific supplementation or anything that you take besides iron?
Yes. Definitely paying attention to your gut health.
Yes.
So for me, some of my favorites are glutamine for that. Also, what's another one? Glutathione. So other different things, adaptogens, you know, mushroom complexes. Also, magnesium can be really important, as well as vitamin D. Yeah, I have some different things that I do.
And then, and what about, do you eat dairy? Do you eat meat? Are you more plant-based? Because you have it, don't you have a plant-based
protein,
right?
Happy Viking. Yes.
Happy Viking. Tell me about that.
Well, it's about, you know, bringing out your inner warrior, but for your well-being and for your own health. You know, a lot of times we don't always put our health first. So it's about fueling that. And it's just the most amazing thing, because it's not just for like your body, but it's also for your mind. So it kind of has the complete body, mind, macronutrients. And so it has DHA, omega, sunflower oil, and fiber, and then all the 9 amino acids that are for protein synthesis and nutrient absorption. That's a sentence. So
wow, that was
tissue repair and recovery. So it's for your mind, and it's also for your body, because you have to treat both, right? Mm. So I really, really love the triple chocolate I'm traveling with, like.
Mm. Yeah. What kind of protein is it?
It's plant-based protein.
Like so, pea or?
Yes, it's pea and brown rice.
Nice. I mean, I was looking, like, you have so many, you are such an entrepreneur. You have, first of all, I'm obsessed with your interior design that I did a deep dive into, because I love interior design.
So you have, cover, yeah.
I mean, you have a full interior design business going. You have your lifestyle platform, which is, you know, apparel, and that's 11, right? 11 by Venus, Happy Viking, which we touched on. And then a brand that I love, Asutra. That's so fantastic. I love it. I love the bath thing, and it's great. And then, I don't know, you've got all this. How do you spend your time? If someone... It's like, wow, I want to design a house and I want Venus to do it. Like, are you available to go design a house?
Absolutely. to be honest, and I think you probably know this too, you have to have great teams, right? And you have to know where you sit in those teams and what your strong points are. So that's how I do all of those things. It's just knowing where I sit, knowing where my strong points are, and having people that I trust that can also do their part.
So where do you sit, for example, in the interior design company?
For interior design, I love doing business development. It sounds boring, but I like that. I really love doing the concept and working through the concept, and then working, you know, on the follow through on the different phases. And I do a lot of the culture work for our team. That's super important. Culture is first for us. So how do you
do that?
Really, by talking about it. You know, you can write things down on paper and you've got a culture, but if you aren't talking about it, if you aren't practicing it, then there goes. So really just by talking about it, making it part of our language and you know, being the leader in that part. Mm-hmm. So those are definitely the areas that I don't like to do management. I've definitely stopped the management part as much now, especially this year. It's very time consuming.
Mm-hmm.
So that part I've left to those who are better at it than I. Right. Or maybe have a little more time than I do.
Right. I'm going to say.
Yeah.
And then, so 11, will you tell me a little bit about that platform? Because, you know, I love a lifestyle brand. I'm all about it. So
11, why it's called 11 is that it's about bringing your pursuit of your best self. And so you should really go past the 10. You shouldn't just stop. You should continue past it to 11.
Mm-hmm.
So you can get more out of yourself than you think. And there have been moments where I've gotten more out of myself that I just thought, I don't know how that happened. I didn't think I ever could do it, but I did it. What? So that's what it's about. And it's definitely a lifestyle brand, because there's so many ways to get the best out of yourself, and especially living a lifestyle that's mostly plant-based. And I love hair, skin. That's my hobby. I mix my own things at home. My family and friends come to me with all their skin and hair problems, and I solve them. So I have a small thing on the side. It's just your friends and family. But I wanted to represent a lifestyle of health in so many different ways. And that's not just what you wear. Yeah. You know, you can put some clothes on, but what else? How are you correcting your thinking? You know, what are you putting in your body? All those different things contribute to health. So that's what health, what 11 stands for. And we also partner with Credo to create a sun serum too. And it's,
I saw that.
Clean beauty. And we just came out with the lip balm. So that has my name on it because I'm in the sun and I, for the first 35 years, I didn't think I needed sunscreen. It's like I have built-in sunscreen. And it didn't dawn on me until one day I just looked over at Serena and she's got long sleeves, sunscreen on, long pants. And I'm like, what am I doing? I'm ruining my Yeah, and I've been nervous ever since that I'm gonna like start to see this horrible damage that I did to myself. So
yeah,
so I'm pretty passionate about protecting your skin too, because you lead with your skin. It's so important.
It's true.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our partners.
Tumi has a soft side. Discover their new Acer bag collection in its pillowy pleats, satin finish, and crescent shape. Acer is the bag to carry for your 9-to-5 and the 5-to-9 plans that follow. Versatility, after all, is Tumi's signature. Shop the full Acer collection on Tumi.com or at a Tumi store near you.
Okay, let's get back to the conversation. You just said that the business development part is exciting to you. Can you say more about that? Like, what is it? Why is that the part that's like thrilling?
Because it feels like I'm on the court. Because on the court at the end, right, you work, you get the win. But a lot of times that work starts before you even get to the match. Well, not a lot of times, it does. So, you know, when we're doing business development, we want to work at VStar, for example, with a developer, because our projects are usually like buildings or condominiums or things like that. And we do residential as well, but not as much. So having an opportunity to work and like, you know, make those deals happen, it feels like a match. And I feel like I just kind of won, you know, and I like that adrenaline. So yeah, it's interesting that I like that part.
Does a match feel like a negotiation on some level?
A tennis match?
Yeah.
No, it's
sheer will.
It's just an all out like fight. That's the best way to put it. It's a fist fight.
Yeah. I was just wondering if there's like anything that's more strategic. Like I've always wondered, are you just like balls to the wall as hard as you can? Or are you like, oh, well, if she does that, then I'll do that. Like it's, if there's any chess aspect to it of like strategy.
Oh yeah, absolutely. In tennis, you train to the point where you hopefully aren't thinking too much because it's going too fast, especially about your technique. You can't think about the technique.
Right.
And the strategy, yes, you're watching what they do. And tennis is a lot of percentages too. So the percentage, you already know the percentage of what shot they're going to play, depending on where they're standing in the court or how high or how low the ball is. There's only so many plays they can make. So because that's how we get to the ball, because or we don't have a head start because of the percentages. So you're trained to know the percentages. And then if somebody can create things outside of the percentages, that's where you start to get great players. Like for example, Serena, she can create shots out of nowhere. And so then that's someone you're like afraid of because who knows what's going to happen, you know?
That's so cool. I was reading too about your serve and how you have one of the fastest serves ever of all time in women's tennis.
I love serving.
I mean, like 130 miles an hour. That's insane. How does that even happen?
I don't know. I really don't know because I was just playing once and then I started serving big, literally in a match. I didn't know where it came
from.
I was like, how did that happen? And it's just serving big. So I love serving. It's fun. I would say it's one of the hardest shots in sports in general to learn. It's very difficult. And even as professionals, our serves go off and it's a horrible day when that happens. It's like, you know, the pitcher. And if the pitcher's not pitching, right, the whole game goes off, right? That's what the serve is.
And are there just days where it's just not happening and you don't know why? What
happened? I don't know. I wish I knew. It's like yesterday I felt great, everything's working, and now suddenly I'm in the match and I can't feel anything and I can't get the ball in.
Is there
just happened?
So if you're in a real groove, like with a serve, for example, and you're just, you know, point after point, just nailing it, do you notice that there's a common denominator when that happens of like a certain feeling? Like, what does it feel like to be in the groove that way? Is it beyond your comprehension?
Yeah, I think that's called the zone, right?
Yeah.
And the zone is a beautiful thing, and I don't think it happens that often. And mm-hmm. when you start to be in the zone, it's just, you can do no wrong. So that's an athlete's dream, is to zone. I like
But you
that
can't thing. Control it, right? It sort of hits you and it leaves you.
Yeah. I mean, I think there's only moments of zoning, in my opinion, in my sport. There can be a set where you zone and it's great, but I think you can take that concept of zone in life too, being focused and prepared and in that zone, you know? Uh-huh. And yeah. So I don't know.
It's funny. I think it was, I can't remember what artist said this, but they said that like whatever that thing is, the zone, like the inspiration, the muse, that when it comes to you, you better already be drawing or painting. So it's like such an interesting thing for those of us who, not me, but you know, you have a specific skill and you're performing at, like, that you better already be playing tennis when the muse comes, you know, to put you in the zone.
Well, I mean, I'm sure you know about the zone because, for example, I refuse to do anything on camera because I'm the world's worst actress.
And how do you know this?
I know. And I don't want to embarrass myself. And it's just, I am not a camera, I'm an athlete. So that's what I'll stick with. But I'm sure, you know, there have been moments where you felt like, wow, I've really personified this role and I'm really flowing with it. And other days where you probably can't remember your lines and like, you know what I mean? So I'm sure you've had that zone too.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Sure. For sure. It's very frustrating when you don't have it. I think if you're an artist or an athlete, like if you're a channel for that kind of thing and it doesn't come, it feels pretty demoralizing.
I agree. And then I try to trick myself. You know, this is an emotion. Like, I don't think I'm playing well. That's just an emotion. Just let it go. Like, just play. You know, so I try to, like, in those moments, try to mentally work around that feeling. Because then once you're out of the zone, then it starts to all become mental, you know.
Is that dangerous when it starts to become mental? Does that affect performance?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I mean, it's all mental because especially in sport or whichever, everybody's good. And what's great about the great players is their mind, you know, who can be stronger mentally for the longest amount of time.
Mm.
Everyone that's good at practice. Let me tell you, I've seen a lot of great people in practice match fall apart, you know, the pressure.
Right.
Or what we perceive as pressure. Just a game, right?
Yes. With the whole world watching you.
Let's take a quick break to talk about one of our partners.
From visionary filmmaker Luca Guadagnino comes a new movie called Challengers, starring Zendaya, Josh O'Connor, and Mike Feist. Zendaya plays Tashi Duncan, a former tennis prodigy turned coach who transforms her husband, Art, into a world-famous Grand Slam champion. To jolt her husband out of his recent losing streak, she makes him play a challenger event, close to the lowest level of the pro tournament. Her strategy takes a turn when Art finds himself standing across a net from his former best friend and Tashi's former boyfriend, Patrick. Tensions run high as past and present collide. Tashi must ask herself, what will it cost to win? See Challengers only in theaters April 26. Get tickets now at challengersmovie.com.
Okay, let's get back to the conversation. Who is your support system? Like, besides your parents and Serena, who get you through life? Who do you lean on the most?
Yeah, definitely all my sisters. I have older sisters too, and they are just the best. You know, in those moments where you're just on the ground, worst loss ever. You can't believe it happened. That's the first text you get, you know, right after. You're great. You're going to be, you know, you'll get the next one, you know, and you're like, I did do feel better. And like, you know, the air comes back into you. Yeah. So they're definitely my biggest support. And growing up with four sisters, there's always someone. So, you know, you call, it's always someone you can call. There's always someone there for you.
That's so nice.
Growing up, my parents told us that your sisters are your best friends. So they're like, you don't need best friends. Your sisters are your best friends. And that was the rule. So that's what we did. And I like that because now, you know, we were even closer. But at the same time, you know, you do have to go out there in the world and meet other people. And I've done that too, but
are you married? Do you have a life partner or anything?
No, single mingle.
Single. Do you want to?
I don't know. It's a lot of work. You know, I don't know. And then people are like, it just gets harder. So you have to really make sure you have commonalities. I'm like, it gets harder as you go along. I mean, why would I ever do that if it's just getting harder? So especially now, like I said, I'm 40 and my life is great. And I would not change my life for just anything, you know?
Right.
So I don't know what the future is for me, but I've always just been a person who's happy where I am.
That's so inspiring. It really is. Cause I think that's very hard for a lot of us, you know, to be content with where we are in time and space.
Yeah. It sometimes is, as we, and I think about that sometimes. You're like looking forward to even when you're looking forward to the future, what about enjoying your now? You know, I'm looking forward to this exploit, this, and then it's like, okay, just be in this moment. And I think with COVID, I was able to like start to appreciate that. But now that it's starting to pass, you go back into your old habits, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, it's true. I had this the other day where I was like, gosh, I'm not ready for this. I'm not ready for small talk and traffic. And like, I was like, I wonder what we'll think as we look back on that year. Okay. I have one last question for you, which is, so it's so amazing to see, you know, you so in the present and fully embodying yourself and doing all of these incredible ventures. So is there something that you haven't done yet that you still want to do?
Something I still want to do.
Do you want to learn a language? Do you want to start a totally different kind of business? Do you want to retire?
I do want to retire at some point and get a life. you know, my tour is 10 months out of the year, so you're always on. So there's no stopping as a tennis player. So I think, though, I like teaching. I like teaching beginners, and I would just like to help people, and that would make me happy. So I would love to just help young people who want to learn and maybe who don't have that many advantages, and help them be their best and find their way. And that's what I'd like to do. But also, Serena said the other day, she'd like to go to every Michelin restaurant in the world. And
can you guys bring me on that mission when you do that?
Yes, we will. She panicked. She's like, I don't want to get fat. I was like, I don't have to do it all in 1 year. And she goes, oh, I was like, relax. So I think that could be really fun to just go eat.
I'm coming. Seriously. Bring me. That sounds like a dream.
We can work out in the morning. So that way we can eat all, you know, work off what we're going to eat that night.
Exactly. And then you could, in between, you know, when you're traveling to the next one, we could do just like a greens juice day.
Yes.
And then go to the next one and indulge.
I agree.
That'll okay, be good.
All right. We'll do it.
It's a plan. Thank you so much for talking to us today. You're just an amazing woman. So inspirational. And I just wish you all the best.
Thank you for listening to my chat with Venus Williams. What an incredible athlete, creative, and leader. I hope you enjoyed her insights as much as I did. Thanks for tuning in. This has been a presentation of Cadence 13 Studios. I hope you'll listen, follow, rate, and review all of our episodes, which are available for free on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Odyssey, or wherever you get your podcasts.